Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. I hope all of our members and non-members are having a nice holiday week. We wish you all a happy new year. There was some confusion as to whether we were having a show this week, but we're definitely here and ready to talk. Steve is with us as usual, and I'm here, and Beth is here, and I think Janine may be joining us. For those that aren't familiar with the Great Loop and our association, there is actually a continuous waterway around the eastern portion of North America. Our association is called America's Great Loop Cruisers Association, and we were formed so that all of our members and everyone dreaming of doing the loop could get as much information and contact with other members as possible. Our website is www.greatloop.org, and we'd love for you to visit. There's plenty of free stuff, and you can also become a member. Our guest hosts this week are very, very popular sponsors of AGLCA, Captains Chris and Elise Caldwell of Captain Chris Yacht Service. Chris and Elise live and cruise on their Gulfstar 44, and they welcome clients aboard to share their experience. Chris and Elise are wonderful teachers, and if anyone wants cruising lessons, real live, on-site, contact them. They are on our webpage. You can easily click on the link from the right side of the webpage. Today, Chris and Elise will be taking us on a cruise from Panama City to Tampa, Florida. Anytime during their presentation, you can call in with questions or comments. The toll-free number is 877-497-1815. Somewhere during the middle of the show, we'll be asking a question of the week. It is super easy this week. If one of you members out there don't call in and win a free extension, I'll be very, very disappointed. Chris and Elise, why don't you get started with your talk?
Well, good morning, and thanks for that lovely introduction. We really enjoy meeting all the loopers, as we've been to quite a few of the rendezvous. They're always a lot of fun. So today what we're going to talk about is something that some of you loopers have already done, especially in the last couple of days. There's been a tremendous weather window, and that's making the jump without jumping ship. We're talking about making the crossing from the panhandle of Florida over to the west coast of Florida. And what we want to just indicate is that, yes, there's something also called the Big Bend, but that tends to be more for a shallow draft boat. So our boat is 4 foot, and we've even had some issues coming in to the west coast a little higher up than what you might consider for a deep draft boat. We came into Yankee Town and ran aground, but we'll tell you that story in a little bit. What we want to bring to everyone's attention is there are many, many, many cruising books that you can read about the Intercoastal Waterway and crossing the Gulf of Mexico. But the ones that we use a lot and we think are very helpful for people who are going to be cruising that area are, of course, Skipper Bob's Cruising the Gulf Coast. They talk about the Big Bend a lot, but they also give you some indication about making the jump, and the Waterway Guide. And then there's also a flip chart that people don't use as much in this area, but it's called the Kettlewells ICW Mobile Bay to Key West chart book. And that indicates a lot of this cruising ground. So we've got a couple of ideas that we would like those of you who have not made the jump yet to consider. And one of the first things is weather. Now, the first time that we made the jump in our boat was not the first time that Chris made the jump, but that was back in 2000, and we didn't even know about AGLCA at that time. We didn't even know that they had a wonderful forum with Tom's Weather Musings, and we find that over the years has been extremely helpful in just touching base. Sometimes even when we're going to make a crossing and it's not the normal time, we'll write into the forum and say, Tom, what do you think about the weather? And most times he is much more accurate than NOAA ever could be. So we just want to give that plug in and thank Tom for all his weather musings, because it's been extremely helpful to not only everyone else, but to us as well.
We love Tom's musings every morning. I don't know if you members listen or read the forum. You should. Tom, besides giving the weather, he does it with such superb humor, and there's always a little bit of a story there. So get used to reading Tom's musings.
Right. And if you're not crossing right now, you still can look at what he's projecting, what he's forecasting, and he is spot on. The next day, the day after, you look back at what he had forecasted, and he is so together with that. So we're real pleased to recommend that. We also want you to realize that when you're making your decision, the weather, and I know Tom indicates this in his musings as well, the weather is different for different boats. So when we cross in a 58-foot stabilized trawler that's full of fuel, heavy with water, it can handle an awful lot more than maybe a 36-foot semi-displacement boat could be. So it doesn't necessarily matter whether you're fast or slow. It's how the weather affects you when you cross. So that is like the biggest planning piece that you can consider as your weather. And then, for many people who are coming to this part of the waterway, this is the first time they're experiencing the intercoastal waterway with the yellow triangles and the square stickers that are on the markers indicating it's the intercoastal waterway. That's a very, very helpful tool at this point for people to start paying attention to stay in the intercoastal as opposed to veering off on a side channel by accident. So the statute miles are also something that is extremely helpful in this area of the ICW to determine how many days you can travel and before you get to your jumping-off point. Okay, then the third thing that we want you to consider before you make a jump, before you make a crossing, is your cruising schedule. And as Chris says, throw it overboard. Schedules are dangerous. They get more boaters in trouble, causing bad decisions so that you can get somewhere by a certain date. You can always leave your boat somewhere and drive back home for the holidays, or you know, rent a car one way, or have people meet you by car instead of meeting you by boat in a different location where you said you were going to be, so you got to get there. The schedules always get us in trouble, so you want to really be careful of that and know that you're on cruising time, not on a calendar time. Another note to consider is to follow the NOAA charts, because you could have all the chips and all the nifty gadgetry with your GPS chart plotters, et cetera, but the charts are paper charts are really important to follow along with as well, so that you can keep yourself from running aground. The Gulf Coast of the Intercoastal Waterway is extremely shallow in many spots, and so we want to just bring that to your attention. You don't have the deep, even you can go miles and miles offshore and still only be in 20 feet of water, so it's not as deep as you might think. And then the last piece that we want you to give a tremendous amount of thought to is preparing with spares. And maybe, Chris, you want to talk about this aspect that you just can't have enough of certain things.
Well, without trying to alarm anybody, things that you need to be aware of, if you've been looping for the past few months, we can assume that you've been in the river system in North America, the Mississippi, the Ohio, the Cumberland, the Tennessee, the Tom Bigbee. What I'm saying is there's no big waves out there. So you may have old fuel, dirty fuel, sludge in the bottom of your fuel tank that you're unaware of. Once you get out into the big blue, into the Gulf of Mexico, or later on into the Atlantic Ocean, your tanks might be sloshing around because of the wave action. Therefore, you may have your fuel filters plug up, so you want to have spare fuel filters and learn how to change them before you go out into the big blue. If you've got a single-engine boat, It's a little more exciting because you have to turn off the engine. But an alternative to that would be having a dual fuel filter. So you can run on the right-hand fuel filter, and if it were to foul, change the selector valve to the left-hand fuel filter and change the right-hand fuel filter while you're still operating. If you've got a twin-engine boat, chance would have it that one engine might plug up a little sooner than the other engine, so change the engine that's struggling with dirty fuel, run on the other engine, and understand when you have the first engine fuel filter changed, start it up, and then change the other one before you have to, because you know it'll plug up. The other thing to think about would be
Say again?
I'm sorry?
Oh, I thought somebody was asking a question. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Chris.
Okay, the other consumable part would be the rubber impeller for your raw water pump. So you want to have one spare impeller for each engine. And those are the only two things that you would think about maybe having to replace while underway crossing the jump from the Florida Panhandle to the Florida Peninsula in the neighborhood of Tampa, Florida. So have those on board. And while we're talking about spares, something you may not have thought about are ocean-type life jackets, properly termed Type 1 PFDs. They're the bigger, bulkier, thicker, fatter, more buoyant ocean life jackets, and they're beneficial in two reasons. One is they have much more flotation than your little $5 life jackets that you keep in your dinghy. And the other thing, and we're not trying to scare anybody, we're trying to prepare you for reality. If it gets rough out there, you may want to put on that big, thick ocean life jacket because it's also thermal protection from the wind. And if you get bounced around a little bit, you've got that thick foam rubber that will protect your rib cages if you trip and fall and you fall against the corner of a chair or a cabinet. So that would help your rib cages there. So, again, not trying to scare you, but trying to open your eyes and be prepared for something that you have not experienced before. Another thing to think about in life-saving consideration is possibly an EPIRB, which is an emergency position indicating radio beacon, which is a satellite signaling device that goes up to the satellites, and the U.S. federal government will receive your emergency signal and dispatch a Coast Guard boat or helicopter. One level below that is something we jokingly refer to as a poor man's EPIRB, meaning it doesn't cost a lot of money, is the MMSI identification number on your radio. A lot of people may have the newer radios with that little square red button says lift door and press button. Well, that's not going to work unless you have that wired into your GPS. The way this is set up is your newer radio with the red door and the button is the Maritime Mobile Safety Information. It can only transmit your latitude and longitude if it's wired up to the GPS on board your boat, meaning the radio doesn't know where it is unless your GPS tells the radio where it is. And when you press that button, then that will send out a radio signal to all of the other boats in the vicinity that also has an MMSI radio. It will beep. It will show a course line on your GPS to where that emergency signal is being broadcast from. Other things to think about to prepare to make the crossing are buddy boats. So if you've got your spare equipment, your spare parts, maybe an EPIRB, maybe the MMSI. Before I mention buddy boats, let me go back to one last item. If anybody has sailed in the past, they may know what a jack strap is, a body harness, and a tether. We're not sailboat mariners, we're powerboat mariners. But we have these jack straps, and we clip one on the bow of the boat, and we run it down the starboard deck to the aft part of the boat, and we clip the other one to the bow of the boat and run it back the port side of the boat to the aft of the boat. This is about a 1.5-inch thick nylon belt, high quality belt. It's a lifeline. Then we put on a body harness, much like you see people working in cherry pickers doing work on power lines. And then there's a tether that goes from your body harness to the jack strap on the deck. And you're thinking, why do you need all of this? And we also used to think that, but we made the trip. Let me finish up with this. When we made the trip, our anchor came loose on the bow of the boat. Not something that we're proud to tell everybody because we should have secured it better. And I'll say I thought I secured it better, but it still came loose and it started banging around on the front of the boat.
And my first response was, it was 2 o'clock in the morning. Noah had lied and we were in much higher seas than we were supposed to be. And I said, just let it go. We've got extra anchors on board. We can just let it go. And Chris said, it's going to poke a hole in the hull if I don't get out there. So now 2 o'clock in the morning in much rougher seas, and he has to strap himself in to be safe. So we slowed down, and he did strap himself in, got out there, secured the anchor better this time, and off we went, much safer than had he just had to go out there without that, you know, that jack strap securing him. Okay, with that little story, why don't we take a break, Janice, and you can go ahead and ask your question.
Okay, I'd be happy to. And again, members out there, I'll be embarrassed if somebody doesn't answer correctly. The question is, what color burgee do you fly if you have never completed the loop but are an AGLCA member? Toll-free number, 877-497-1815. The first member or non-member who calls in with the correct answer will get either a one-year extension on their membership or a one-year new free membership. Okay, continue, Chris and Elise, and if we get a caller, Beth will interrupt us.
Okay, fine. So, again, we're not trying to tell you horror stories. We're trying to tell you real-life experiences so you can learn from our experiences and other people's experiences and be better prepared. Speaking of being better prepared, let's talk about buddy boats. If you're making the trip, do you want to go by yourself or do you want to go with the buddy boats? We were our first trip across the jump when we started cruising full time was in May of 2000. We bumped into another boat somewhere in the Fort Walton area that was cruising along the same direction we were. We're in a Gulfstar 44 trawler, and they're on a Monk 36 trawler. So the first day we noticed they anchored kind of sort of where we did, and the next day they were cruising along at our speed in our direction. So we talked to them on the radio and found out that they were going down to the Keys, and we asked them about making the jump because I have never done that on our personal boat. And they gave us some tips over the radio, and then that evening we anchored near each other, and we dinghied over and visited and had a glass of wine and planned more about it with the charts. Then the next day and the next day, we ended up in Apalachicola, and we had to wait for weather. We had to wait in Apalachicola, I'm guessing, remember it was 12 years ago, I'm guessing it was about 3 days we had to wait in Apalachicola. So we got to become better friends. We got to ride our bicycles around town. We had a lot of fun. And then the weather was right. So we planned our trip across the jump from Apalachicola, and we were headed down towards Tarpon Springs. And they had some personal friends in Yankeetown on the Withlacoochee River. And we figured we're not on a schedule, so we followed them to their friends on the Withlacoochee. So before we tell you about our trip, let's talk about some jumping off points or some panhandle locations that you can plan to make the jump to an area in the Tampa Bay neighborhood. Okay, some areas, depending upon your boat, depending upon the weather, consider Panama City as a departing port. If you've got a bigger, heavier boat, you can just run straight from Panama City to the Tampa Bay area. If your boat's not that big, heavy, or ocean-worthy, you may want to travel on down to Apalachicola or Carrabelle, because you're traveling further east in the protected waters of the Intracoastal, and you're covering more ground in calm waters instead of in the open Gulf of Mexico. We chose Apalachicola. We waited for the right time, and we left. Understanding our boat cruises at 7 knots and looking at the distance across, we realized we could not make it in a daylight period. And cruisers start to talk in terms of daylight periods. If you think about it, in the wintertime, we're now in December, January, we have about 8 or 9 hours of daylight. In summertime, we've got 14 or 15 hours of daylight. So you need to think about the time of year that you're doing this trip. Since we were doing it in May, we had more daylight, but we did not have enough daylight to make it in one daylight period. So we wisely were advised by this other couple and the monk that we would leave in the afternoon around 3 p.m., go out the pass into the Gulf of Mexico, and cruise for a couple of hours. If we decided the weather was not to our satisfaction, we could turn around and come back before dark. But as it was, the weather was great. We stayed in VHF radio contact the whole way across. We were traveling about 3/4 to 1 mile apart from each other. We could see each other's running lights during the evening. We could talk to them on the radio. And keep in mind, this is before cell phones were so common and so cheap to own, but also think that when you get out there, you don't have cell phone coverage, so you have to have the VHF radio. And there was a lot of comfort that when we were making the crossing, I believe it took us 22 hours from start to finish. So with only two of us aboard and our 100-pound Labrador retriever named Fred, we had to take turns sleeping. So if you're driving by yourself, the dog can't talk to you. So you need to talk to the other couple on the other boat just to keep yourself alert and awake and talk about the weather directions, and possibly altering your course lines.
Now, we chose to do this trip coming into the Withlacoochee primarily because we knew we were going to come in somewhere around that. We were going to actually plan on coming south of there a little bit into Tarpon Springs. But the comfort of traveling with another person made our decision. I'm going to tell you, had we to do it again, I think we would have branched off from them at some point and kept going, because we could have gotten into Tarpon Springs in almost the same amount of time that it took us to get into the Withlacoochee, because it's so shallow. You have to follow such a specific channel to come in, and the channel goes out for miles and miles from shore. Then, with our 4-foot draft boat, when we got into the Withlacoochee, we were absolutely in between markers in a channel, and we ran aground. Now, this is where the buddy boat hurt us, because we followed them where they were shallower than us, but it helped us because they turned around and came back and pulled us off of a pretty hard grounding. The other piece that I want to share with you is we have a big lab, and he was not trained to go on the boat. So I know many people think, what do you do with your dog for 20-some-odd hours when you're making a crossing? Well, that dog waited and waited and waited until I'm sure his back teeth were floating. And when we ran aground before our friends, our new friends, came back to pull us off, we were in the middle of the river. It was very narrow. It was very easy for the dog to make it to shore. He, without permission, jumped off the boat and swam to shore. As soon as he touched ground, boy, you could see the relief in his eyes. And as our friends were coming around the corner in the river, they're screaming to us, "Get the dog out of the river. There's alligators in the river." And there were. It was a very, very scary thing at that point to think.
Your dog is big.
Yes, he's very big. And here he is, has been so good for all these hours, and he doesn't want to go on the boat. So he jumps off knowing that he's going to be able to go to shore and do his business. And, almost got eaten by alligators. So fortunately, we scared the alligators away with a big old paddle, and he got back onto the boat safely. Our friends towed us off, and we went a little bit further up the river. This is where it would have been lovely to have a Skipper Bob's book or a waterway guidebook, because we didn't have any of those either, to tell us that there weren't too many marinas up that river. And we ended up having to raft up to the owner's boat because our boat at 44 feet was the biggest that they had ever taken in at that marina. So you have to be really careful about where you're going into some of these little small marinas and small creeks coming off of the jump. It would have been much better for us to go into Tarpon Springs, as we did the next day, and had a little deeper channel going in and a little more flexibility for a marina to stay in.
Now, some parts of adventures and cruising, doing the Great Loop, when we went into Yankee Town, their friends came to pick us up in a Jeep pickup truck and took us out to dinner. And it was dark, and we must have ridden for 30 minutes, and we went to a place called Pig In, Pig Out, and we ate dinner.
It was the only place that was close by, 30 minutes away, in the back of a pickup truck. It was interesting.
And then the next day, we came out of the Withlacoochee without grounding, because we knew where that spot was, and went south to Tarpon Springs. And we always think of America, and we all have our own viewpoints of how America was built. But when we went into Tarpon Springs, everybody speaks Greek. I'm not talking about funny words. I'm talking about the real Greek language. There's a lot of Greek sponge fishermen that still live in Tarpon Springs. It was an adventure in Tarpon Springs. And then we cruised on south through Clearwater, Tampa Bay, Sarasota, and ended up down in the Okeechobee Waterway and crossed Florida in the Okeechobee Waterway.
Sounds like a wonderful adventure.
That was 12 years ago, and we still remember it very fondly.
Huh?
And we've done it multiple other times on other people's boats, helping them do the trip northbound or southbound. So we've got a lot of experience. If anybody wants to post questions on the website, please do, and we'll be glad to answer them for you.
And if I can stress this, we always focus on safety first. Fun has to fit in there somewhere, but safety is the most important thing. And if you pick the right weather day, we have had incredible crossings that were as flat calm as a glass mirror. And we've had some that when we've been on a schedule, that dangerous S word, where they've been a little bumpy and a little uncomfortable. The boat can certainly handle more than what we could or what our clients could, but that is the number one piece to consider is the weather for your boat and whether or not it can handle it. And if you pick the right weather day, you can have an absolutely glorious cruise, especially if you pick it when you've got a moon. That's lovely when you're going across and you've got the light of the moon.
We only have a minute or two before Chris and Elise's battery is going to run out. I just wanted to say again, there's been chatter the last few days in the discussion forum about hands-on experience versus school. Chris and Elise have a wonderful, wonderful attitude with cruisers. If you want hands-on experience, remember that they're available. Chris and Elise, please, what's your website?
Our website is www.CaptainChrisYachtServices.com. Just spell it all out.
And again, you can link from our website, which is www.GreatLoop.org. Chris and Elise, thank you so much. It's been very, very informative. I appreciate your doing this for us today. And everyone out there, have a Happy New Year.
You're welcome, and Happy New Year to you, too.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.